You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So hype right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days back with the vengeance. Back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way. Melly.
Welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast. I want to thank you for making this show part of your daily routine. It is the Friday show. Your week is over. If you're listening to it on Friday morning, you just got to get through one more commute and you're going to do it. And this show, I, John Corrales, will try to help you do that. I cover this team for MassLive.com and I'm joined today by that other guy who covers this team for MassLive.com. Tom Westerholm. Tom, say hi to the folks.
What is up?
We are going to talk about trades because no matter how many times we answer the question, no matter how many different ways it comes up, people want to know about Celtics trading for bigs. That's coming up later. In the second segment, Jason Tatum is unleashed a brigade of floating shots, which is interesting. It's weird to see, but he is launching floaters all over the place. We'll talk about that in segment two. Segment one, as I promised in yesterday's podcast, Tom and I have watched the game live. We have rewatched the game, and now it's time to get a few more thoughts on the Milwaukee Bucks and Boston Celtics, that big second half comeback. And Tom, you know, we sit there after games and listen, and I feel like sometimes these guys talk about things that are just bullshitting us a little bit, like the same things, like, you know, Brad talking about, you know, hitting home runs versus hitting singles and blah, 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 blah. But I tell you what, there was something to that in the second half. And I think the one thing I didn't talk about in yesterday's podcast that I think stands out for me is they did in the second half, much more often than in the first half, come down and work the ball around and get those paint touches. And you hear like Gordon talk about, yeah, we need to get the ball going side to side. And I was like, yeah, everybody says get the ball side to side. But they actually did like multiple paint touches. The first possession of the third quarter where it was a set play and it was multiple paint touches. The ball did go side to side. And Gordon Hayward gave up a three in one corner to get another three in another corner. I think the Celtics ball movement that really stood out in the second half to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, especially with the points in the paint, they were getting crushed on that in the first half. I can't remember the exact numbers, but they were, I mean, Milwaukee was killing them because they were getting into the paint whenever they wanted, and they were spraying the ball out to three-point shooters whenever they wanted, and the Celtics were just getting run around in circles. By the time the end of the second half, it was 34-34 points in the paint. Like, it was dead even. And, yeah, I think that really does reflect the fact that they did, you know, start hitting. And I thought it was interesting, you know, Brad talks about hitting home run or hitting singles instead of home runs. And he never talks about it in terms of like, this is going to work every single time. He talks about it in terms of at least you're giving yourself a chance. Right. And I felt like that's kind of what the Celtics did, was they were just like, look, you know, getting destroyed. It's, you know, it's like an almost a 20 point game. Milwaukee's just firing on all cylinders. Even if they don't come back and win that game, they can play the right way for 24 minutes and see what happens. And worst case scenario, they go into their game against New York feeling a little better about themselves because they mounted a comeback. And, you know, obviously they did mount the entire comeback and they came all the way back. And that isn't going to happen every single time. And, you know, they're not going to win every single game that way where, you know, that perfect – they're not going to play perfect basketball every single night. But, you know, sort of adhering to the process – I think that really benefited them. And the other thing that I think really helped was just they didn't have somebody to, yeah, I wrote a little bit about this. They didn't have somebody to throw on a cape. You know, they didn't have like Kyrie to be like, okay, nothing is working. Just go give it to Kyrie. You know, Gordon can't hit. Tatum can't hit. Go give it to Kyrie. He'll handle it. Like, those guys had to work through their issues. They worked through them, played great in the second half, and all of a sudden, you know, they look like a really good team again. I thought that mattered, too. Just these guys actually had to go out and do it themselves.
Yeah, I don't think – I mean, I think Kemba is the guy that you can rely on in those moments, but Kemba is not –
But he struggled in the first half, too. He had to work through it in the first half, too, which I think, yeah, kind of the same thing there.
Right, right. So but I also don't think that Kemba is going to always be the guy that says, I have to go do this. Like, even in that moment in the Toronto game that we've talked about a few times where Jalen took that quick shot and he was like, nah, you're good. Like, he knew he was hot and he was cooking, but, like, he's not pissed that that happened. He's just like, all right, let's just keep working. I'll find you. You know, like, I think that's the ultimate thing is Kemba's not going to be so half-cocked in I've got to go take over now that he's just going to take horrible shots. He'll take some quick shots because he's feeling it, but if he gets double teamed or triple teamed, and he'll kick it out. So I think that maybe this year more than others, there's I keep talking about hierarchy, but like we know Kemba, Tatum, and Hayward, at least in the Bucks game, Brown to a lesser degree, it's when it's crunch time, it's going to be those three/four guys. And really, as long as it's in the flow, any one of those guys can take it, and I don't think the other guy is going to get pissed.
Yeah, I think that's right. I something I kind of wrote about, I think it's kind of interesting how, you know, most people, I think, would agree that Kyrie is, you know, a more talented player than Kemba. I mean, Kemba's incredible. Like, don't get me wrong. If Kyrie's more talented than him, Kyrie is an A and Kemba's an A minus. Like, it's not a huge gap by any stretch of the imagination. But he is, you know, he's not so overly talented that he is going to demand the ball. And I mean, it might be a mentality thing too. It might just be like, he's better at, you know, deferring and all that, but he's not going to be like, give me the ball, get out of my way. Like that's just not who he is. And I think that's really going to benefit a team full of so much talent. Like, I think there's a place for the way that Kyrie plays, and it's on a team full of role players. But the Celtics are more than a team full of role players. They have a lot of really, really talented guys. And having, even if their best player is their point guard and their best scorer is their point guard, having a guy who, you know, is willing to defer like that, having said, like, I just think that makes a huge difference for this team. And I think that it's an area where the downgrade, the small downgrade of talent at point guard might really benefit them if it ends up elevating everybody else.
Let's move on to other quick thoughts here from that game. I'm curious, like, it's funny that in the second half, Milwaukee was missing shots. They were missing makeable shots.
Yeah.
And like, I say that like Milwaukee was like Chris Middleton. It feels like he shot 6 of 8 in the second half, and I'm like, geez, it didn't feel like Chris Middleton was hitting, but it was weird. but like Pat Connaughton, who was killing them in the first half with daggers, missed all three shots that he took, and those were kind of open. I don't know. I think when you look at a comeback, like you kind of need some of that stuff. Like you kind of need. That's just like leveling off. And I don't know. I bring it up just because you need the other team to be complicit in a comeback. And I just kind of want to throw that little thing in there. Like the Celtics were able to get stops. They did a great job getting stops and deflections, but Milwaukee also just kind of missed and had a little bit of a regression to the mean. And the Celtics, to their credit, did a great job of running out and getting into transition situations and taking advantage of that.
They did. You know, I mean, it was very much a regression to the mean type thing, obviously, because, you know, the Celtics were super off in the first half and the Bucks were just cooking. And then, yeah, I mean, it reversed and that did not play, you know, that sort of order of events did not play in Milwaukee's favor because, you know, that gave the TD Garden a chance to get going. You know, it gave everybody a, you know, sort of a little strut in their step. Like, you know, Smart was, you know, like looking at the crowd and pumping his arms and everything, trying to get everybody going. Like, it just, it really made a big difference having, you know, sort of having the sort of the second at bat, you know, with that.
Yeah.
I mean, but yeah, when you look at, I mean, when you go up and down, like second half, Wes Matthews and Kyle Korver combined to go 1 of 8 from three. And like a lot of those shots were very makeable, especially for Wes Matthews. Like, yeah, he was missing a lot. I mean, these are not numbers that are going to be sustainable. And you can take things away from that game. What you can't do is say, oh, this is like, you know, this is, they can replicate this. Like, there's things they can replicate. You know, they can continue throwing Marcus Smart at Giannis and see if that continues to work. They can, you know, continue defending him sort of in a similar way with all their small guys. But I mean, like you said, in a game like that, the first half, you know, being that cold and then getting that hot in the second half, you know, and the roles being reversed with Milwaukee, like that's just not going to happen again. These games are all going to be very different, you know, and we'll see how that plays out.
I guess it's a fine place. What are any other thoughts that like really stood out to you from the game before we move on?
Not really. You know, it was really fun. I mean, I think that was one of the big takeaways, was just how much fun.
Yes. You know, that's a good thing to bring up.
Yeah.
It
really was. I mean, the first half, even the first half was interesting, you know, just to see like, okay, like they, you know, big wise, they really have no answer for Giannis. I mean, that's an interesting thing to see. And, you know, in the second half, sort of seeing like, okay, they have no big answers for Giannis. Here's what they're going to try to do. I mean, that was interesting. And, you know, just, it's really fun to watch Kemba. Like Kyrie obviously is extremely fun to watch too. And you know, you don't, I know that comparison's beaten to death, but it's four games into the season. So we can't really help it. But Kemba's just really fun. And it's a different type of fun. It's more communal. I think, and that's really entertaining. And yeah, I mean, watching Tatum sort of figure himself out a little bit too was really entertaining as well. So yeah, I mean, these guys are enjoying each other. You know, it really feels like everybody's kind of getting back to enjoying the game, and that makes for a better watching experience.
Yeah. I think it is important for people to enjoy basketball.
Well, we just had like the previous 7 months, we enjoyed zero basketball. Well, not zero, but we enjoyed very little basketball over the last 7 months.
Yeah.
So it's
basketball,
refreshing, to be sure.
It is. And it's impressive. It's refreshing to watch Tatum figure himself out. Part of that is floaters. Like what? Which we'll talk about when we come back. I would not have put money down on Jason Tatum taking almost 3 floaters per game. I'm sure if I could have, I would have gone to MyBookie, because MyBookie is the place to go when you want to bet on whatever it is, pro, football, college, basketball, any of that stuff. So MyBookie is the premier place to bet on all of your professional sports. We're in the middle of football season. Patriots are still undefeated. You can lay money down on anything within that game, whether win or lose, prop bets, all of it on mybookie.com. They always have the most up-to-date lines and the most prop bets of any sports book on the planet. So if you're going to bet on anything this season, the smart thing and the best place to do it is MyBookie. If you want to bet a little bit and try to win a lot, you can do a parlay. You can pick your locks for the week, put them together on one bet. If they all come through, boom, big wins. Best part right now, if you sign up for MyBookie with the promo code Locked On, MyBookie doubles your first deposit. So let's pretend you put down a $1,000 bet on something and you win, you get your $1,000. That's exactly what signing up for MyBookie is like. They double your first deposit with the promo code Locked On. You put $500, they give you $500. Put $1,000, they give you $1,000. Promo code Locked On to double your cash. So visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Jason Tatum is doing something somewhat new. He's putting up floaters like crazy. Like, in the first four games of the season, you watch closely enough, and it's pretty obvious. Like, what is he doing? He's hit three so far in four games, according to the NBA.com tracking data. I pulled up the stats. He's taken 11 so far, and he's hit three. The 11 works out to be 2.75 per game, and that works out to be about 27.3%. Last year, he took 57 over the course of 79 games, so that's 0.72 per game. So he has added two extra floaters per game, and last year he was hitting them at a 45.5% clip. So, Tom, what the hell is going on here?
Well, I mean, I think a few things are happening. One, he is really, really, really focused. We've talked about this 100,000 times. He's really focused on getting into the paint.
100,001, no.
Yeah, yeah. and when you get into the paint, you know, sometimes as much as people would like to see, you know, every single time that somebody gets into the paint, you go, you know, you go bashing your way toward the rim to try to get to the free throw line. Like, sometimes that option isn't super available. It is hard to block a floater. So, you know, especially when the guy tossing it up is 6'9". So that's one thing. Like, it's just a difficult to block shot in an area where there are going to be shot blockers. And I think too, there's just sort of, he has good touch. You know, he's really good free throw shooter, really good 3-point shooter. You know, so I mean, it is a makeable shot, and it's just kind of a tempting shot to throw up. Like, it, I mean, anybody who's played basketball and who's kind of slashed to the rim like that, like, it just feels so makeable. Like, you just think to yourself, like, I look at where I am. I'm 6 feet from the hoop. I should be able to toss this little shot in. So, you know, I don't know, like, 11 shots is too early to draw too many conclusions. I mean, I don't think that it looks like the most natural shot for him. That's just an eye test thing. Like, I could very well be wrong. He might, you know, start hitting 60% of them going forward. But it is, you know, it is kind of, it's almost like a siren call. Like, when you get into that area, it's just so easy to toss that little thing up there and see what happens.
Yeah, I do feel like this is like a byproduct of, all right, I'm putting my head down, I'm getting into the lane. Like, that's it. And I think right now for Tatum, getting into the lane is the priority. How exactly he finishes when he gets there, not so much the priority. Just get
it's a work
there.
In progress. Yeah.
Right. And in many ways, I kind of see this part of Tatum's game similar as I saw Jaylen Brown's game basically a year ago, where I think last year Brown was attacking, maybe not exactly in the half court off the dribble, but a lot of times in transition. How many times did we watch Jaylen Brown drive in a straight line and jump with no clue, no plan, no nothing? I'm just going to go see if I can dunk on everybody and and get timed and get blocked or turn the ball over. And it wasn't until he learned to more consistently vary his speeds and vary his angles and kind of keep the defender guessing as to exactly how he was going to attack the rim, that he started finishing. Now, this year, I would say that Jaylen Brown's probably the best at finishing at the rim, aside from, like, Kemba. Like, even if Kemba's aren't falling, like, Kemba is just so good at, when he gets to the rim, of figuring out, like, change of directions, jump stops, jumping back into people. But aside from him, like, Jaylen Brown has really gotten good at finishing at the rim. So, I think Tatum is taking that, like, step, and it's almost like that lump of clay that now he's like, okay, I'm putting this lump of clay, and I'm going to start slowly chipping away at it, and the floater is part of the chipping away. I'd be surprised if in the last, like, if I remember to do this, in the last five games of the season, or the last five meaningful games of the season, if I go back and look, I wouldn't be surprised if he put up 11 floaters. Like, I think he's just trying to work on it. It feels like something that he's just trying to work on. If he can get it down, then it becomes a nice weapon.
Yeah. Because
if you get into the middle of the lane and you're a threat to put that floater up there, What happens, Tom? The defender steps up because he has to challenge that shot. And if all you have to do at that point is a little tiny, tiny head and shoulder fake to make it seem like you're going to go up for the floater, that defender has to respect that. That extra inch is the difference between getting past that guy and finishing at the rim and getting blocked.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. Some quick stats if you're interested. Jalen so far is shooting at a very nice percentage at the rim, 69%, whereas Tatum is shooting 42% at the rim. So
wow.
It
got worse.
Well, this is via cleaning the glass, so I don't know. It might be they filter out the garbage time stats, so there might be something in there. But yeah, it's real bad. Kemba is actually not that great either, 56% at the rim, which is the 40th percentile among point guards. Anyway, no, and I mean, the one other thing I'll bring up about floaters is it's also very tempting to do in the pick and roll, because when you get into the paint in the pick and roll and you sort of have that guy like on your hip a little bit, it's hard to sort of explode toward the rim from that point because you're sort of like holding a guy off. It's a lot easier to sort of like loft up a shot than to like, you know, try to really go up at the rim and really try to go into contact or really try to go up for a dunk. I mean, that's kind of a hard thing to do. So, yeah, anyway, that was my only other thing to add to that besides the fact that Jalen shooting really nice at the rim.
You just wanted to drop that 69. That is not a level of maturity that is proper for the lockdown.
Are we playing baseball here? What's going on?
I don't know. I think I might start taking myself too seriously since Jan Packard left. I'm all in a loop. I have no clue anymore.
One more fun stats here. Marcus Smart is shooting 100% at the rim. He's one for one.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's actual nice, not, you know, body nice.
Right.
Not nice? How many questions I'm getting about trades for big men? I'm just joking. You can ask me as often as you want. But seriously, people are asking me a lot. I'm sure Tom's getting it a lot. That's the number one question about the Celtics right now. When we come back, we'll have more answers for you. Stick around. More Locked On Celtics next. Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. So I joked around before about getting this question too much. I'm kidding. Please send me the question as often as you want. I'll try to answer it as many different ways as I can. I always appreciate the questions and the interactions from everybody. So that's cool. Maybe you didn't hear it the first time or see it the first time, but the question is, will the Boston Celtics trade for a big man? And it's always some variation. Who can they trade for? Who would they trade away to get that big man? And so on and so forth. Tom, before the show, told me, I want to talk about this. I have takes, is the quote. So, Tom, what are your takes?
They're not like incredibly strong takes. I just think that people need to calm down a little bit with the idea of like trading for a big man. Like, these guys look pretty good. Like, and I'm not saying that they are perfect as currently constructed, but when you look around at the center market, any of the guys who is actually going to be a game changer is going to require players who are like real players. Like, you're not going to be able to get, Domantas Sabonis for like a collection of picks. Just like financially, that doesn't work. Like, basically any trade you put together, or a lot of the trades you put together, probably going to cost Marcus Smart. Like, do people want to give up Marcus Smart? Because I don't think they do. And I don't think the Celtics want to give up Marcus Smart. And I think that if the Celtics can try to get away with, you know, piecing together their big man rotation, obviously they'll struggle if they go up against Philadelphia. Like, we've seen that. I don't think that first game is representative of how much they'll struggle, because I think they actually will make open shots. But I just think that, like, as the team is currently constructed, I don't know that there's a major need to go out and get sort of a center who kind of moves the needle, kind of doesn't. Like, that type of guy, I just don't think they need that guy. They've got that guy in a bunch of different ways. And I personally think you got until the trade deadline anyway. You might as well wait, see what's available. I mean, yeah, if DeAndre Ayton comes back and Phoenix is willing to give you Aaron Baines back, then sure. Like, then I 100% get it. But in the interim, it's just so hard to make a trade for an impact center that I don't think it's worth it, given how much talent this team has and how good they've looked at times this, so far.
Yeah, my number one thing, I think with all of my answers, has been, what kind of problems do the Celtics create by fixing the problem they have in the front court?
Yeah.
You know, like, it's one thing to say, we need to get this guy. And so, an hour ago, before we record this on Thursday night, I wrote about Draymond Green. And now I phrased it like, sorry, Celtics fans, they're not trading Draymond Green. Not that I thought that there was a big clamoring for Draymond, but I have seen and heard the question about, like, maybe, what if? And the question always becomes, the guys who are worth trading for, like you suggested, are making enough money where you kind of have to trade Marcus Smart for him. And so in this theoretical Draymond Green trade, you have to trade Marcus Smart. It's the only way, through a variety of reasons. You can read the piece, which I wrote in column form, but does explain technically why Golden State basically can't really do this deal. But in this particular thing, you fix a front court issue, but you give up Marcus Smart. Like, in giving up Marcus Smart, unless you get back a decent backup point guard that you can trust, and you're really creating a defensive monster presence at the rim, then I really struggle to see what the advantage is of making a deal. There's Sabonis, forget it. Not only is Sabonis, are they not going to do that? He's now poison pill, and
right,
because of that extension. So poison pill, just like Jaylen Brown is poison pill. All of these rookie guys who just got their extensions, poison pill contract, poison pill, which again means you have to take the average of all of their salary this year and the extension, and that's what the receiving team is considering in terms of matching, but the trading team can only take back what the actual salary is this year. So Sabonis, $3 million plus. So in any sort of trade, they have to account for the average of Sabonis' deal, which I forget, somewhere in like 15, 16, 17. But they can only take back $3 million or so. How does that work out? It's so nearly impossible. So then you switch over and you say, well, Miles Turner. Okay, well, Miles Turner, and he makes 18. So it has to be Miles Turner for Marcus Smart and a piece, or Miles Turner plus something for Gordon Hayward. Like, you go down these roads, and I'm not willing to do any of this stuff anymore. It's done. It's over for me.
Two things on that. One, also, if you trade for Miles Turner, you have not fixed the Joel Embiid problem, because Joel Embiid likes playing against Miles Turner. The other thing I would say too, just on Marcus Smart and like trading him, it's like, I feel like his name gets thrown in a lot because of that contract, and because, people do kind of see that and say, oh, there's the matching, especially nationally. I don't think Celtics fans do this much, because they as much as they may exaggerate his heroic nature, they understand his value to the team, I think, better than just about anybody. But I did want to read a quote from Kemba Walker from last night on Smart. He said, they asked him about Smart hitting big shots. He just said, that's who he is, man. That's who he is. Over the years playing against that man, he's just a tough guy. He never shies away from the moment. He's made some huge shots. Kind of goes on a little bit. He says he's a tough guy. He works extremely hard. We need him to continue to do that. And if you watched Kemba in that scrum or in that post-game availability, Kemba's like a very expressive guy with his face. He was like, he really, really likes and respects Marcus Smart. And there's something to that. Like, your trade, I mean, you know, it goes back to exactly what you were saying, where what are you giving, like, what problems are you creating? If you lose Marcus Smart, you are losing the guy who brings everybody to the Terminator movie because he's determined not to have last year happen again. You're right. Losing the guy who, you know, is willing to mix it up with Giannis Antetokounmpo. You're losing the guy who does all of these ridiculous things. I mean, looking at it from a long-term perspective, you're losing a guy who you would really like Grant Williams to fashion his career after.
Sure.
Like, you're not just losing a solid backup point guard. Like, you're losing something much bigger than that if you trade Marcus Smart. And I just – there is not a non-all-star big man in the NBA who I think is worth that.
I think when Marcus Smart signed his contract, it was obvious that that was the one type of contract he didn't have. And we talked about it on this show plenty of times. And at that point, Marcus hadn't emerged as a shooter. He didn't have, like, that was pre-last season where he kind of stepped forward and we're like, oh, okay, there's the shooting. He hadn't kind of leveled off as a leader. Like, he was still crazy Marcus Smart, but he was he was like heat check Marcus Smart, stop shooting Marcus Smart. Like, great to have so he could do crazy things and yeah, impact winning, but like that was also the extension signed months after he punched a frame in Los Angeles. And so I think at that point it was very much they signed him to keep him because they liked him, but they also signed him because they need a middle of the road contract, a $12 million contract to throw in with a Tatum or Brown to get an Anthony Davis without giving up everything. You know, so that the whole theory was you keep a Brown or a Tatum, you can tell New Orleans one or the other, and then Smart, and then that all of a sudden the numbers started to match. Now, the number is still very tradable, but the value of that contract is, I think Smart is really outperforming the contract. And so over the course of now, it's now the second season since he's signed this, the calculus has changed. And now, worth is whatever you perceive it to be. And I'm sure now Boston and Boston fans and more Boston fans sit there and say, Smart is much less tradable than he was the summer where he signed that contract. So some people will still say yes, Smart and plus whatever, but it's becoming very much not worth it to trade Smart plus whatever to fix this problem, because you're not getting anything nearly in return than what you're losing with Marcus Smart.
Yeah, he's become this weirdly difficult guy to trade, because like, on the one hand, you look at him and you think, like, okay, this is a guy who is, he's there to, like, match salaries, but he's way too good for that. And that makes him bizarrely difficult, because they had Jaylen Brown, they had Jason Tatum, they had these guys, and, you know, you pair one of those guys with Smart's contract, and, you know, and then it's an easy thing. It's like, okay, if you're going out to, you call it Bradley Beal. Like, yeah, like, then, sure, like, that would have made sense if Smart had, you know, stayed crazy and if he'd stayed at 27% three-point
right.
But like, he didn't. He's 25. He's been in the year for been in the league for a while. He's much more mature now. I that's not to say that he's not gonna, you know, do something at some point this year that makes you kind of shake your head, but like, he is much less of a loose cannon, and he is also like kind of the heart and the soul of the team. And also he's a good player. Like, before, you could say that he brings value. Now you just have to sort of say, like, no, Marcus Smart is good. Like, he is a good basketball player. And at his contract, that makes it really complicated, because if you're trading Smart and Jaylen Brown for something, you legitimately better be getting, like, an all-NBA player back, because you're giving up a lot of value. So, yeah, anyway.
No, I completely agree. I love the way you put it, because he is in this weird spot, because the value to Boston is immense, but you wouldn't put him on a level of a Bradley Beal. But Smart plus something else, the other thing you need to get to Bradley Beal, is suddenly like, whoa, now that's a little too much. So
it might be too much for Bradley Beal. Like, and that's insane, but it's like, yeah, like if you're giving up like good picks and good players and the salary to make it work is also a really good player, that's a lot.
Right. Like Smart alone is not enough. And that, yeah, obviously. But it's when you add other things to it, then it's too much. And, you know, so it's like Smart is 3/4 of a cup of water, and you need to add another half a cup of water to make the trade, but you're spilling. Like, that is just too much to give up. So he's and you know what? A credit to Marcus Smart for getting to that point, for being this maniac defensively and having a game like he did against the Milwaukee Bucks, where you watch him guard and switch all over the floor and orchestrate the defense, calling things out. They don't have an Al Horford back there. So Marcus Smart is like orchestrating the defense from the guard position, but he's also like guarding a big guy. And then he goes out and hitting threes. What is he? 5 of 11, which is insane. But like, he's prone to do that much more often than he has in the past. And it's the hard work is paying off. And I think that he's just much more aware of the craziness. And you know what? And I don't want to bring it up as a way to minimize it, but I do think that the loss of his mom put a lot of things in perspective, and he brings that up a lot. Like, he now understands what's important in life, and I think that's allowed him to control things a little bit more. And he actually brought that up out of nowhere with me when I did that feature on him last year. And I do think that having gone through this other personally tragic thing that's so much, much more important than basketball brings now into focus some of the things that maybe he overreacted to in basketball. And I think that just that's given him a level of perspective just in life. So,
yep,
I'll leave it at that. And I will leave this podcast at that. I want to thank everybody for listening every day, all week long. It's been great. We are here for you Monday through Friday. It's daily, free, 5 days a week. You do not have to pay for this show at all. The only thing I ask is that if you are a subscriber, to give this show a 5-star rating on iTunes, if you can, if you are an iTunes user, an Apple Podcast user, because that kind of is the gold standard. And we have risen up the rankings a lot. But the more people that give us that 5-star rating, the more people that give us that good written review, means more people are sampling and listening. And the more listens we get, the more the advertisers pay. And that's how you pay us. So that's it. If you are not a subscriber, go ahead and subscribe wherever your podcast exists. Ask your smart device in your car or in your home to play podcast Locked On Celtics, and share the podcast. Tell everybody they should be listening to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.